You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I am Lindsay Ehrens. Let's go inside Utah politics. Well, we begin our program with Utah in the national spotlight. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. came to town this past week to applaud state lawmakers on policy he says advances Make America Healthy Again priorities. Now, Kennedy is particularly proud of our state banning added fluoride in public drinking water, saying he plans to tell the CDC to stop recommending it nationally.
The evidence against fluoride is overwhelming. In animals, in animal models, and in human models, we know that it causes IQ loss, profound IQ loss, and it's dose-related. So the more fluoride you get, the higher levels in your drinking water, your urine, the more likely it is you lose IQ.
Well, I'm joined today by House Speaker Mike Schultz. He met with Secretary Kennedy this week. Speaker, good to be with you again on Inside Utah Politics.
Thanks, Lindsay. It's great to be here.
Yes, thank you for joining me. Okay, so do you share those views that Secretary Kennedy just talked there about how fluoride may lower IQ? Share with me the science on that.
Well, let me come at it from this point. So it's not uncommon for Utah to be in the national news, especially right now. Utah is number one on so many fronts. We have number one economy, number one best state to start a business in, number one state in the nation for upward mobility. So it's not uncommon for Utah to be in the national news. Even though we are a smaller state, we pack well above the punch. And so Secretary Kennedy recognized that with some of the bills that we passed this past session. Fluoride. Let me tell you what was concerning about fluoride. So some of the recent studies do show that the levels that fluoride is being put into our drinking water, into not all of our drinking water, but in some areas into the drinking water, that it could be concerning. And so you had a lot of the water companies come really concerned with future lawsuits. There's been some court cases in California that exacerbate some of those concerns. And so what Utah was looking to do was lead the nation. We also tried to find ways for win-win solutions. And so we recognize that there are people out there that fluoride is important. And so no longer do you have to have a prescription to get fluoride for your kids or for yourself. If you'd like, you can go directly to the pharmacist and get fluoride.
So I hear you that you kind of you tried to make it easier, right, on people's end. And while you banned it at the same time.
We did. Made it significantly easier. Yeah.
But the EPA already regulates fluoride, right, to certain levels. You can't put it in the water over. It's like 0.7 milliliters per liter, whatever the measurement is. So they already regulate it. Are you saying it's too high in Utah? Because those studies are really not saying that for the dose we put in our water.
Actually, there was a court case in California that said that the science shows that those levels could be too high, and that's what was concerning to the citizens of the state, certainly to the legislature, and certainly to the water companies.
So when we look at these Make America Healthy Again policies in Utah, we did fluoride, we limited some SNAP benefits from purchasing soda, and then we also, I'm going to forget the third one here, on
school lunch process dies in our school lunches. Absolutely.
Yeah, so when we look at these policies that Utah did related to this Make America Healthy Again initiative, are these the things that you believe make America healthy again, or should we be focusing more on education and these types of programs instead of just what it seems like we're doing is taking things away from people?
Well, I think it's important to do all of the above, right? Education needs to be an important part of it. You look at the obesity rates in America right now, and it is astounding, especially among our kids. The SNAP program, look, the number one item purchased with SNAP benefits is soda pop. That's not what the intent of the SNAP program is. Oddly enough, the most criticism that we received and the biggest pushback that we received on Capitol Hill in passing the SNAP, doing away with soda pop, was not from the SNAP beneficiaries themselves, but was from the retailers and those that stood to make a profit off of it. Coke and Pepsi nationwide are out there trying to stop these bills from passing. We actually led here in the state of Utah, one of the first states in the nation to pass it. And again, Again, that's not what these programs are designed for, but it's the number one thing that being purchased, which we know Snow to Papa leads to obesity. School lunches, certainly. Our school lunches need to be healthier for our kids. And you look at the obesity rates among kids skyrocketing. These are all things we need to do. I think we need to be looking at more bigger things as well.
Why is it not people's choice, though, what they buy with their SNAP benefits?
Well, I think for the most part it is their choice. But again, SNAP was never intended for people to buy. The number one item consumed is soda pop. That's not the purpose of the SNAP benefits, right? 20% of the SNAP benefits that are being used goes to junk foods. Again, I think there needs to be a broader discussion around it. Yes, those people do need, that are on the SNAP benefits, do need the benefits, and we think that they should still have them. But is soda pop the best thing to be spending those money on?
So SNAP is a federal program. Mm-hmm. That leads me into my next question, where I want to talk a little bit about some comments you made this week about how you want Utah to be less reliant on federal programs, right, to help people here in Utah. Let's take a listen.
National experiment, allowing us to keep the state of Utah to keep some of its federal dollars and tax dollars and run the programs. We want to be a pilot project, help discontinue the federal oversight, whether it's education, transportation, Medicaid, public health, public lands. We manage more effectively, more efficiently, and more affordably than the federal government, certainly, but more so than any other state in the nation. Sign us up.
Okay, so I hear you there. What you're saying is you want Utah to be less reliant on the federal government, but our state budget, 11% of that comes from federal dollars. Just looking at the Medicaid program, 70% of that comes from the federal government, 30% comes from here in Utah.
Yeah.
Does it mean that there would be less services for Medicaid if we took that over, or does it mean that, like, how would we make up that money if we did do that?
Let me go here first with it, because it's really important to note that Utah is the number one most prepared state in the nation to do away with or to have budget cuts come from the federal government. And so as the federal government's looking right now to cut those budgets, there's not another state more prepared to deal with that than Utah is. And that's a nationally recognized source that put that out. And I'm excited about that. That's good, right? That puts Utah in a really good position to deal with these things. When we talk about Medicaid or the Department of Education, or there's so many other things, what we're saying here is take and block grant that money to the states, and even maybe do it with less if that's what you're trying to do, cut the dollar amounts, because we can do more with less here at the state level. If we have the federal bureaucracies out of the way that create all the hoops that you have to jump through. Look, we understand what the laws are here in the state of Utah. We're not trying to get around the laws on the federal side, but we can implement those laws at a such better financial cost to the citizens of the state and the nation, actually, and get better outcomes here at the state level than the federal government can 2,000 miles away.
So how would you do more with less, though?
Well, again, if you don't have the federal bureaucracies wrapped around trying to get that money in the first place and just trying to do all the things we can do more with less. We do it here with transportation, right? Utah led the nation with doing our own NEPA studies inside of transportation. We follow the same federal rules, same federal guidelines. We do it in a quarter of the amount of time that it takes the federal government to do it at a much reduced cost. And so those types of things are the things that I think we can do with, if you block grant the money to Medicaid, let states figure out the solutions. States are the laboratories of democracy. We can do it more efficiently, more affordably, and more effectively here in the state of Utah.
Let's switch to transportation since you brought that up. That is an area where you want the federal government to come in with their money and help us paint a double track front runner, is it not?
Well, we would like to get some federal funds to come in and help us pay for the double tracking of front runner, absolutely. And we think it's an important part. We'd like to have it done before 2034 for the Olympics. We as a state has already set aside over $500 million to do that on our port. But again, we need to recognize that the majority of the money that we get from the federal government for transportation is the money that we already send back to the federal government. So Utah is a state that that gets about as much money back as we send. And so we'd rather keep those dollars here inside the state of Utah. We can spend them more effectively, more efficiently, and again, get better outcomes for the citizens of the state.
Let me switch topics now to our very last topic before we run out of time. We haven't spoken since I reported on your polling your members on potential veto override. So there were six vetoes. Two of those have the votes to potentially override. Will we see a veto override session?
Well, we'll see what happens, right? So we're in the process of continuing to have the dialogues with our members. We have till the end of the month to do that. So that's part of the process. We respect the governor's vetoes. Some of them I agree with. Some of them I don't agree with. And so as we go through the process, we work with the House, we work with the Senate to see where the members are at. It's no small feat to override a veto. It takes a two-thirds majority. So we'll see what happens.
Which vetoes do you not agree with?
Well, I'm not going to go.
Come on now, Speaker.
You can look at the ones I voted against. So there's two bills that I actually voted against that I maybe three. So
I'll have to go back and look. But you have the votes for the Ireland trade and the...
No, we don't have the votes for the Ireland trade.
Oh, you don't? I thought it was the Ireland trade.
No, that's one of the bills that I actually voted against as well.
Okay. So we have a Supreme Court Chief Justice. Mm-hmm. That one doesn't have the votes. It's not very close, but could you override that one?
Well, we'll see. We're going to continue to have talks with that. The governor mentioned that, there was some areas where he may be supportive of that. So we'll continue to have those discussions. If it doesn't get overridden and worked out this year, we'll have a discussion around with next year.
You also said the governor broke a deal, essentially, to have some of those judicial bills move forward and other ones not. Explain how he kind of...
Well, I think it's important. There was an agreement made with the judiciary. So I'm not saying specifically the governor, but there was an agreement with the judiciary on we would sideline a couple bills and continue to have those discussions over the interim, and they would move neutral on the Chief Justice bill. That is frustrating to us. And we felt like we compromised and had a good position on that. We're disappointed that the governor didn't weigh in sooner. Earlier in that process. We wish that he would have. But it is what it is at this point. We'll find a way to move forward.
Okay,
it's part of the process.
We'll look and see if that veto override session happens. Okay. Speaker Mike Schultz, thank you so much for joining me today. Stick with us after the break for more. We've got a panel for more in-depth analysis on these issues and more coming up on Inside Utah Politics.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Welcome back. As we discussed with the House Speaker just moments ago, it's been a busy week in Utah politics. And joining me today to sort out the signal from the noise, we have Adam Gardner. He's the founder of ASG Consulting, and Mara Caraballo with the Ixoro Group, public policy and lobbying firms here in the state. Two experts to weigh in on some of what the speaker just talked about and other topics today. So, Mara, let me start with you. What do you make of RFK Jr., of the EPA administrator, coming to Utah this week and really touting those Make America Healthy Again bills and messaging from the Trump administration?
So I think that top leaders in Utah are in alignment right now with what the Trump administration is doing. My big question is Utah leading or is D.C. leading? So who won the PR battle? Like, did the Utahns leave this week going, hey, terrific, our leaders are leading out on national things? I think that happened in a couple of other events this week. I felt like particularly with the health and the fluoride and some of the suite of bills that we passed around health-related things, feels a little like we're following the Trump administration, not leading.
Adam, what do you make of that? Do you see it the same way? Is the state leading out, or is it the Trump administration saying, here's my agenda, Utah, do this, and...
The state has actually been able to accomplish something the administration hasn't been able to do. No bills have gone through Congress to get fluoride out of water. No school lunches have changed by any directive of Congress. Like, Congress hasn't done much. We've seen a couple of executive orders, but Utah actually finished their legislative session and passed bills. They actually did something and became the first state in the country to get rid of fluoride. And now Kennedy is telling other states and the CDC, directing them, hey, we should follow Utah's lead. So I do think that Utah is leading out, but very much in alignment with the Make America Healthy agenda.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. The speaker there also talking about bringing federal programs to the state level. He basically said, sign us up, make Medicaid come here. We can run it. The education department, public policy or public lands, all of these issues that are run at the federal level. The speaker says, sign us up. We want to be the laboratory here in Utah. I want to play a clip real quick of the speaker's just previous comments here.
Because we can do more with less here at the state level. If we have the federal bureaucracies out of the way that create all the hoops that you have to jump through.
He goes on to say there that there are just a lot of hoops from the federal government, and Utah thinks it can streamline it here. But when we get down to brass tacks, how feasible is it for even just, we'll take Medicaid, for example, a very complicated federal program that checks eligibility, that checks, you know, who receives health care in the state and gives us a lot of money for that. Can we run that on a local level?
So a couple things. This isn't the first time we've heard this from the speaker. He had this in his opening day speech. It's not the first time we've heard it from Utah. Mike Leavitt actually put together this really sophisticated federalism plan that had several attempts at these block grants. Now, block grants generally are federal dollars. They come to the state and they have less oversight. Less oversight is why you criticize them. Coming directly to the state and letting locals do what they want to do, that's why you support them. So that's what the speaker is proposing. I think Utah has a long history of federalism. We have a lot of citizens who love the notion. I think, Lindsay, one of the things you're pointing out, though, is we're not seeing many details. So even if Utahns are listening and they're like, I love that concept, we can spend our money better. I would say insist that your leaders have a plan. What we know is not happening at the federal level is a lot of planning. It's a lot of headlines and not a lot of planning. The notion of shifting this money and letting Utah be an experiment to maybe really direct some of these federal funds, the devil is going to be in the details there. So don't just take a feel-good headline on federalism. Make sure we know what we're doing. The other good thing the speaker said is we could do more with less. I mean, here's the irony of getting along with the Trump administration. They're drying up tax dollars. So I don't know. I mean, the Biden administration spent a ton on infrastructure. I'm not so sure that the Trump administration's message is, I don't have any money for you, states.
Well, I think that a big problem here is it's administrative rules and administrative oversight and strings attached to every single federal dollar that comes to the state. So, yes, we can do more with less if we have to get rid of the oversight and the administrative rules. So, yes, sign us up. He made a couple mentions of Medicaid, but we already do this on the federal level with transportation in our freeway system. We handle that.
And we've been highly successful.
We've been great at it.
Yes.
UDOT has done a fantastic job. We do that with the EPA. We perform a lot of our own inspections. We do that with OSHA. That's a federal program delegated to the state. And a lot of states don't have that, but Utah does. Utah has been trusted in the past. I think we can be trusted in the future. They've also come up with a plan. Let us take BLM lands, federal lands. The state has already proven that we can manage them better than the federal government
now,
can. So let us do it.
The courts did disagree with our assertion of ruling our own lands. I mean, that's hit a legal block. But to Adam's point, there are several kinds of block grants. They do have less streams. Some of them are competitive. Some of them have directed funds. I think it's an interesting conversation for Utah to continue to have the question of the federal government, why don't you block grant us and let us define our own fate?
Sure.
But I would still want, don't you want the state to have some detailing? The reason UDOT was so successful is UDOT really does well at planning and follow through.
And transportation dollars are very different than Medicaid dollars, right, in how the programs are run.
Not if you block grant it in the same suggested style. We just don't traditionally look at federal funding that way.
And states and counties already have to do so much with Medicaid. They're familiar with the programs. If the federal government says, we're open to this, let's make you a laboratory, we can come up with a plan. I don't think that should be terribly difficult. We have experts in our state, and I trust our state more than I do the federal government. But I want to use one example. When a new gate needed to be built at Hill Air Force Base, the federal government couldn't get it done. They didn't appropriate the money. They didn't handle it through the Air Force. They didn't handle it through the DOD. They gave the land that was needed for a new gate to the state of Utah and to MIDA and to UDOT. They were the ones that actually could do all of the NEPA process, the environmental process. And they are the ones that funded the gate and that funded the entire process, did all the environmental testing. The feds didn't have to do any of it.
Here's the part we have to watch out for. In a supermajority, trains run on time. But often a lot of voices are left out because of the supermajority, and that's what you'd have to balance with wanting it to have local control.
Sure. I would just say, are our voices getting left out on the federal level? Yes. I don't know, even in a supermajority state or having a minority, our voices aren't being
heard on the
federal level.
But we disproportionately get federal dollars. I mean, Utah's always had a bit of well-done hypocrisy on how much we hate the feds, but we punch above our weight with getting federal funding. We've always been highly successful at attracting federal dollars.
Great, and let's use it to run our own programs.
We could go on and on for days and days, and I would love to, but let's move on to a different topic really fast, and maybe you guys disagree on this one, too. When it comes to the Trump tariffs we've seen this week, we had the implementation of all the tariffs, then we had the pause on all of the tariffs. What do you make of the whiplash?
I don't know how much we disagree.
Whiplash
is not good for business. Yeah. And we've seen in Iron County, they're stopping production of iron ore that they've been shipping to China. I guess it'll force a lot of these companies to diversify. But everyone's kind of on pause. Even though we have a 90-day pause, we don't know if it's coming back. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if the rates are going to be higher, lower.
I've seen some Democrats accuse the president even of market manipulation, and one Democrat calling for an investigation into possible insider trading. Who knew what when he, you know, the markets rebounded, right, as soon as he implemented the pause. What do you make of that?
The instability is what's going to hurt everybody, and it's not particularly partisan. The worry and concern here is that this seems to be hatched fully of an aging mercurial mind. It does not seem to be following a playbook of even the art of the deal or the strategy of how to bring people to the table. This seems very arbitrary, and arbitrariness is not what economies like, no matter what engine you want to pull. And one of the things I'm concerned about in Utah, so you go back to how does it matter to us, we crush it with small business. We're entrepreneurs. We have really good cottage industries here. And who gets left aside in unstable markets really quick are small businesses, because they can't ride out these. And this is a person who's mapping to his own mind. He's not mapping at all to political philosophy. Usually when Adam and I are disagreeing, we sort of know each other's philosophies. We just don't completely buy into it. My concern
respectfully.
My concern with the Trump administration and how they're doing tariffs, it's not mapping to any economic philosophy. It is just a randomness of an individual who has decided to treat the executive branch as though he is a monarch.
Let me bring it back to just a local topic really quick, because we only have about 90 seconds left, and that is a possible veto override session. The speaker just sort of said, we'll see, and look at the bills that I supported that got overridden to figure out which ones we may override. What is your take on whether or not we see a veto override session? We have until May 6th. There are six vetoes. Could any of them be overridden?
Yeah, they have about 3 weeks. They're talking right now. We need to remember that who has to agree is the House and the Senate. And they might not totally agree on and have the votes on the same bills. The other choice I don't want us to forget in Utah is the House and the Senate is also currently negotiating with the governor's office. Another option is to bring an amended bill to a special session and pass a new set of bills that the House and the Senate and the governor's office can agree on. What I'm hearing is that they're talking all the time right now.
That's true. I think there's going to be the precious metals bill. That's been the far right and the Eagle Forum. Those types of groups are sending out emails, making a really big play for that. That passed with a veto-proof majority. Okay. That's one we could see. The rest haven't really been public.
Yeah, and the question is sort of, is that bill enough on its own to hold an override session? Do you need to couple something else with it that's a little more sexy, for lack of a better word?
I think a special session.
And can you amend? I mean, remember, the governor's criticism, a few of these bills were drafting criticisms.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily an objection to the idea. It was an objection to how well it was drafted. Was it coherent and cohesive? He has a couple where he philosophically objects. But for example, the precious metals, it was more about the ability to follow through on that. Could you redraft that?
Being able to appoint the Supreme Court justice, that's going to be a big deal that we're going to talk about.
We will see. Mara Carabella with the Axora Group, Adam Gardner with ASG Consulting. Thank you both for joining me today on Inside Utah Politics. More when we come back.
Well, that's going to do it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure to reach out. You can email InsideUtahPolitics@abc4.com. You can also follow along with me. I'm on all the social medias, X, Blue Sky, Threads, Lindsay on Air, Instagram as well. Just search for Lindsay Ertz and Lindsay spelled with an A. Our show is also online in podcast form, so just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz wherever you get your podcasts. Well, thanks for joining us this week. We'll see you next week on Inside Utah Politics.